Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everyone, you are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. I have a special guest this week. You're never going to guess who it is. It's Dr. Nay. Hi, Dr. Nay.
Hi, Megan.
Should I sing this theme song?
Yeah.
What was it again? Megan and Dr. Nay.
That's right. Dr. Nay.
No, I'm joking, but we still need to make this is. This is your third appearance on the show, so we really need a theme song now, I think.
We do.
And I just wanted to thank you for coming back on. I wanted to ask you a question, because usually I start with a story. And you know my whole like history with my family. You know pretty much everything about me at this point.
Yes.
My mom loves to correct my grammar, and it drives me like legitimately bonkers because I'm in my 40s and I'll be talking to my mom and telling her a story and she'll be like, Cindy and I, because I'll say something, you know, she's always correcting me and it drives me bananas. Mm. And I can't stop her. No. I wanted to know any tips on how I don't blow my fuse and go nuts on my mom every time she does this to me.
Well, why do you think it triggers you?
It's such a good question. And we're already getting into the thick of therapy. I don't know, but she's done it to me my whole life. And she does it to my sisters too. So like, if we're telling a story, she'll be like, you know, she'll be like, "And it's to Pete, Meg," you know, and she'll start like correcting my English when I'm trying to tell a story. And then I'm so ADD, I'll forget what I'm talking about. It just drives me bonkers, but I wanted to know if that's something that people have ever done to you and if it irritates you as much as it irritates me.
I'm sure people have done that to me. And I just think at this age, your mom is your mom.
She's never going to change.
She's never going to change. Maybe there's a like English teacher dying to come out in her. And like,
well,
she's
she was an English major.
Oh, then that's why. Yeah, it has nothing to do with you. It's because she's an English teacher. And I just accept it and laugh at it and just know, she just expect that that's going to happen.
I mean, it doesn't bother me that much, but it was really just, I don't know. I just had a conversation with her and she did it to me. And I was like, ugh. Like, you know, it's like that little kid thing where no matter what age you're at and you're at the Thanksgiving table, you always go back into whatever age you were.
Like, that's right.
In the family dynamic
growing
up. Right.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's her shtick. that's her stick. Yeah. She doesn't just do it to you. And I don't know.
Maybe. She does it. I bet you anything she does it to her friend, she'll be like, oh, Judy, that's not how you say it. And she probably corrects her friends. Mom, I love you. I hope you listen to this episode because my mom loves Dr. Nay.
And so, I guess she was a teacher. So she's just trying to help, I think.
She was never a teacher. She was an English major.
Oh, there you go. So she's a frustrated English teacher. There you go.
Exactly. So I talk a lot about how much therapy saved my life and how lucky I am to have my amazing therapist, Dr. Nay. But not everybody can get an appointment with Dr. Nay. And I really wanted to break the stigma on getting help or asking for help. So that is why I partnered with a company called online-therapy.com. They have plans that start around $30 a week, and you can get weekly therapy sessions for less than $50 a week. You can also get my 20% off code by going to my website, judgingmegan.com, and you go to the therapy tab. And if you click on the link at the bottom, you can get 20% off your first month. So today, everyone, I'm really excited for the topics that we're going to be discussing, but we're going to start light. And the show actually is not going to be a heavy show because I like to break up the episodes and not always have such serious topics. But the reason I brought Dr. Nay on today, and she was kind enough to come on, was because these are topics that affect specifically women. And, you know, it could affect men as well. We'll get into that. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to start with a very, very, very serious topic right now. And the topic is Erica Jane, the Real Housewife. What do you think?
Wow. I mean, I have so many emotions around this. So I'm going to like use my own tools.
Yeah, you're
going
to zen
center
out.
Myself and calm myself. I have so many feelings about this. A, because she's a grown woman and I don't believe that she's behaving in an appropriate manner for what she's going through. And B, because it does trigger some of my old wounds and the way I handle things. And not that I believe that everyone should handle things the way I did. However, when you know that the money that you are using or have used is from people who are victims and orphans and widows of unburned victims of extreme trauma, and you're using that for makeup and hair at an obscene level for your own selfishness, that's a problem to me. And the fact that, hey, did she know? It doesn't matter whether she knew then. She knows now. Why isn't Erica Jane giving back to those people?
Yeah. So my thing on this is, number one, innocent until proven guilty. But if you're a listener and you've never listened to this show before and you don't know who Dr. Nay is, I should have said this in the beginning. So Dr. Nadine Macaluso is my therapist, and she is the real life Margot Robbie. So in the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, Margot Robbie portrays Dr. Nay. All her patients call her Dr. Nay. So when we talk about being able to relate to this situation, obviously, if you've seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, which, by the way, is a movie, so not everything is true, and it's not 100% depicted in reality, you can 100% relate to this and talk about some of the things that you did. The reason why, I mean, we're talking about the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Like, give me a break. This is a TV show, but it is a real life story. If you live in Los Angeles, this is this lawyer, Tom Girardi, if you're not familiar with the case, was in the movie, what is the movie called? Aaron Brockovich.
Yeah.
So he's depicted in the movie as this like lifesaver attorney that went to bat for all of these victims in California that were being poisoned by their water. Is it water supply? Was that what it was?
It was water. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so he was one of the highest like regarded attorneys in all of Los Angeles. He did cases of you know, helping orphans, just mm-hmm. like getting to, what do you know about him? Cause I don't know the 100% like what he did.
I know about him originally, of course, from the movie Erin Brockovich, where he is this hero for these people that have been poisoned and gotten cancer. Through chromium, I think it was, and it was a PG&E, and he won $330 million for these people. And so then he based the rest of his career off of, like you said, being a savior for victims of big corporations or airlines that have crashed or cancer victims that got treated with a wrong treatment, or this one fine young man who got burned to death because of a pipeline that burst into flames. So he goes to bat for these people against these big corporations and wins them tons of money. But then what happened, I guess what we've discovered, is that he kept the money. He never dispersed it to the victims.
And his wife is Erica Jane Girardi, who, if you watch The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, by the way, best, I'm a huge Bravo fan and a huge Real Housewives fan. That's my favorite. That's my favorite city. She is extremely flashy. She's a pop star, or like kind of a self-proclaimed pop star?
Well, you know, that's I think what always, that's really another point of contention, is that she used this money to make herself like Madonna. I mean, you're either Madonna or you're not. Okay. I saw Madonna in Studio 54. In the 80s. And so she used this money, and it was, again, obscene amounts of money. Obscene.
Yeah, and she was on the reality show. Sorry to talk over you.
No, but she's flashing this in the victims' faces.
And one of her songs is, "It's expensive to be me. It's expensive to be me." You know,
she doesn't give three fucks or something. I mean, it's such blatant cruelty towards these victims to see her flaunting their money.
And so, like, let's back up a little bit. The reason why we're so passionate, or you specifically are so passionate about this, is because obviously your ex-husband was the Wolf of Wall Street, went away to prison, and you did the right thing. And once you knew, like, that he was going away, you returned jewelry.
I returned,
got rid of your houses. You did everything you were supposed to do.
I gave up my homes, my jewelry. I always say I took my kids and curtains. You know, I did take my kids and I did take some furniture.
Yeah.
But aside from that, the rest was going to go to a fund. And I never went and asked for them to carve out $600,000 from my homes. I mean, I would never.
So that's what Erica Jane is doing. She's now
like selling jewelry.
Yeah. So she's now, so say she didn't know. Okay. So innocent until proven guilty. She had no idea that her husband was ripping people off, these poor people that were already down on their luck, you know, burn victims, orphans, all of this stuff. And she had like some ridiculous spending habit of, like, you know, the glam squad and all the stuff she had. But let's say she didn't know anything. Right. She does know now. And the fact that she is asking for any money whatsoever, that's the part that's not okay. Correct. Yeah.
Yes. And because that money is blood money. And so when I left my ex-husband, I walked away with nothing. And that's what you do. That was the price I had to pay, you know, and you do it.
How did you do that, by the way? I've never asked you about that. Have been very difficult, because you were accustomed to a certain kind of life and you had the two kids and how did you do that?
So during my marriage, I had started a maternity company and I had my own website, catalog, store. And I sold wholesale to Barney's and Fred Siegel and stores like that. So I'd created this business, and it wasn't like the best business in the world, but it was good enough. And then I grew it. I just grew that business in the garment company. And so I had something at least. And then I moved to California and my business grew. And I did that for many years. And it wasn't easy. It was scary. It was super scary. However, that wasn't my money to keep. It just wasn't. And I knew that. And I knew it was blood money. And I couldn't live with that on my hands. And I don't understand why this grown woman, I mean, I was 30 when that happened, 31. She's 50 something or 50 maybe. I don't understand why it's not computing in her brain and heart that the Panther ring that she wears that's worth $180,000 needs to be sold and go to the guy who was burned from head to toe and they owe $11 million to.
That's a Cartier ring. Does she still own it? She won't return it?
I don't know what she does, but I never hear in the news, and I track it very seriously, that she has said, I need to give to these victims. And maybe she doesn't have anything left. I really don't know those details. However, she seems quite angry that the women are questioning her about this.
Yeah. Okay. So, because last night, obviously this will come out next week and we're recording today, but the episode was on last night. And I said to Ron, I was like, I need to watch this because I need to do my homework for tomorrow's recording. And he was like, Megan, you're ridiculous. And like went outside. He was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. It's one thing if you are like, no judgments, if you have earned your money and you are well off. Congratulations. Good for you. But I agree. I think you're right. And I just think it's a shame if she does know all this stuff. Last week, she was staying in a suite at La Quinta, which is very, very expensive. You would think that she would have, I mean, maybe this is all for TV, but I don't believe that production pays for that kind of stuff. That comes out of the person's pocket.
Yeah. And I think it's a sad symbol of the times that really is it. Oh, like, do you really need 10 Birkin bags at the expense of people that have been burned almost to death and are going to have 5 surgeries a year? I know it's all fun and the Kardashians, and I'm the first one to enjoy nice things. I love nice things within reason. Mm-hmm. You know, but the fact that they are so willing, I mean, he's a sociopath for sure.
Yeah.
He was so willing because he's been doing this for 20 years is what we've discovered. And the LA bar has ignored it. Judges have ignored it. The fact that they are so willing to steal money from these people just to have things is sad.
Well, I think to go off topic a little bit, but it's on point with what we're talking about. Our culture is just obsessed with things. And that's what we are in, especially wherever you live. So say you're in Beverly Hills or even, you know, your area, Manhattan Beach, wherever in LA, it's all about what you drive, what you look like, what your bags, your shoes. And that's one thing to say, like, I earned it on my own or my husband did it, but it is like really out of control. And I have to say, I love the Real Housewives shows, but when you really think about it, it is ridiculous to like look in some of their closets and they have like 10 Birkin bags. Do you really need that? Like, there's people right now, I was driving down the freeway a couple of days ago going to see The Sound of Music at the Hollywood Bowl, which was so cute with Ella. And the side of the freeways are covered in homeless people, in tent cities. And it's like,
right.
I don't know. I mean, don't get me started on that. But I just think it's what our culture is making people into, which is monsters. And then, you know, I believe that the Kardashians work really, really hard, but they portray like, you know, a certain appearance that you have to have, like, you know, you go in their closets and it's the same thing. All these, you know, bags and shoes and everything.
And really, like, you know, I, just to your point, I had a Birkin bag. My ex-husband had bought me this bag. It was this big. Okay. It was black crocodile bag. I never used it. I could never fit anything in it. It was a baby bag. I don't even know what the fuck it was. Finally, I sold it on the real world. I was like, why do I care? Why is this bag meaningful for me? It's not.
It's pretty crazy, like, what the world has become. And don't get me wrong, because I love nice things like you. I'm all about, I just have always been like this.
Reason, you know, balance. And so I think it brings us to our next topic, which is about image and body and, you know, getting older. And they all weave together.
Good pivot. My God. I can't even believe how good you were at pivoting there. Yeah, that is our next topic. So I recently, I'm in my 40s, and are we going to say what decade you're in?
Oh yeah, I'm 53. I love it. I own it.
And by the way, you have a freaking crazy deal with the devil, you and Christy Brinkley, who's way older than you, but still, I'm going to figure it out at some point. I openly talk about on the podcast, I get Botox, I've had filler, I get my hair done every 4 weeks. I'm always on a diet. I did an episode with Diane Neal where we talk about body image and gaining weight and all of that stuff that we have to deal with as we get older, except for you, you don't deal with it, but I do. And I went to my lady doctor, and my OB-GYN, who I'm obsessed with, Dr. Suriel. And I was like, I need an ultrasound. I needed all of my lady work because I hadn't been in like 2 years because of COVID and everything. And I'm not to be too TMI, but I will be TMI because I'm assuming most of my listeners are gay men. So you're probably going to tune out at this point, or women. I've been having excruciating, debilitating periods for the past year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is happening? So I had my ultrasound and I find out that I have something called a fibroid, which is very, very common in women in their 40s. But what's happening is it's covering my entire uterus. And then I had a polyp on top of that, which is precancerous. So I have to have surgery. And thankfully I caught it. So my number one thing is that I'm going to tell you guys is get your physicals, go to the OBGYN, please. Because if I would have put this off, God forbid, you know, and then it gets really bad. So I wanted to kind of talk to you about aging and the fact that, you know, I'm not menopausal yet, but I am starting to have like hormonal issues where I was like, I gained weight over COVID and I couldn't lose it. So then now I'm going to perimenopausal doctor to talk about like hormonal changes. And I got myself put on an estrogen patch because I want to do it early. But people, like women, do not talk about miscarriages. They do not talk about fertility, and they do not talk about perimenopause, and God forbid they talk about menopause. So I wanted to have you on to talk to myself and my audience about your thoughts on this. Also, what your deal is with the devil would be nice to know. Go ahead. You know,
I think that, again, we really are not kind to older people in our society. Unlike Asian cultures, we have a lot to learn from them. And I think it's because we're afraid of death. I think that we look at every wrinkle, every issue we have with our body as one step closer to not being on the planet. And I understand that. That's real. I mean, witnessing my mother die at my age, I do understand that. But I think that what's been helpful for me, at least, is that being a young model and being attractive, getting educated and pivoting, as you would say, into a different area of life that's not based just upon the way I look has been very empowering. Listen, I get Botox, I get filler, I just got injections in my lip. I love them. I mean, I like to have fun with it, but that we have to do it within balance. And I think that hormones are a big part of it. And when we lose our hormones, happens as we get older, they really do affect our skin, our brain, our heart health, everything. And so, you know, in 2002, the World Health Initiative did that study that scared women out of hormones. because they said they got heart disease and breast cancer, but that we've discovered that that's not really true, that if you actually do decide that your symptoms are bad from perimenopause or you are having hormonal fluctuations, you can go on hormone therapy before that, and that it actually is very preventative for a lot of things that happen to us with hormones. And I think it's a really important topic because hormones affect everything. I mean, how do you get the week before your period?
I've noticed, I'm going to be honest with you. The lady that I've gone to, my hormone specialist, and I went to her just because of the weight gain issue. And I am crabby. I have an Irish temper. I've always had a bad temper, but I've noticed myself like so quick to anger. And I saw this lady, she's 80 years old. She literally is still practicing completely with it. And she's been doing this for 30 years. Wow. And she told me that it's, and again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not telling anybody, any of my audience to listen. This is my own experience and what I have chose to do for myself. Yeah. I realized once I got put on this patch that I feel so much better. I've only been on it for maybe a week and a half. My temper is better. I've already started to like lose a little bit of my stomach.
Yeah.
And my eating is like, I'm not as hungry all the time. So it's not just like a physical thing for me. It's also like an emotional thing.
The way you feel, the way you feel in your own body.
Yeah. And so I think it's so important that I wanted to talk about this because I'm not saying like my one little podcast is going to like change the world, but I think the more that women talk about sexuality, perimenopause, menopause, it'll be more accepted. I mean, I think about my own fertility issues and going through stuff when I was trying to get pregnant and loss and all of that stuff. And it's a very sad, lonely place that women find themselves in. Not openly a thing that you can talk to other women about. And maybe you do in passing and they're like, oh, I went through it too. But it's kind of like, you're like, what is that show? The Handmaid's Tale. It's like a passing, The Handmaid's Tale. A passing thing where you don't really talk about it.
Right.
I just, that's it's real. What I think. I think that we need to talk about it.
I think we do too. And I think that women are facing challenges in regards to their hormones. I mean, a lot of women want to work and they want to have children later and then they're afraid, you know, because maybe they can't or, you know, they're not producing enough eggs. And women have so much to manage with their sexuality, their hormones, whether they decide to have a baby or not have a baby, their ovaries, uterus. I mean, there's a lot. What, do we get a hysterectomy, not get a hysterectomy? I mean, I've had breast cancer and I've kind of decided that once my period does stop naturally, I want to get my ovaries taken out, right? Why not?
It's a choice.
It's a choice and I don't methylate estrogen well. That's actually why women have estrogen positive breast cancers. And so, you know, that's something that I think I will do. But again, my gynecologist has told me that I still even can take estrogen. So it's, you know, and I think also now with 23andMe or all these DNA tests, we can really fine tune our own specific biology and genes and make more educated decisions. And that's important.
Do you think that, because I really have thought about this a lot, do you think that all of this stems women feeling the shame of not talking about perimenopause, menopause? Do you think this all stems from men and us feeling attractive or wanted? Like, where does this stem from? I don't understand. I've thought a lot about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, in general, you know, I'm a somatic psychotherapist, right? The body is like a curse word sometimes, okay? I mean, we don't have a body. We are our body. And I think we don't like to talk about bodily fluids, disgusting, you know, things that we think are disgusting about the body, but the body's amazing. So I think that there's that stigma around the body and what it does in a way. we've really like think the mind is everything. And sure, I think that, I mean, I remember thinking, oh my God, when I'm 35, after 35, I'll never be attractive. I mean, I really thought that. I really believed it. And now at 53, I'm like, I'm still attractive. I'm an older attractive, but it's still me inside. And that's what matters. And I know women feel like they have a shelf life because we're so judged on our appearance. I mean, well, we do it to other women, men do it to us, right? This is the best part. You'll be watching the Oscars and they'll say, oh, she looks so old. Then they'll say, oh, look at that plastic surgery. I'm like, which one is it? Right? So
it's so true. And it's like people are judgmental if you make one decision. I have chosen, and it's not even it is vanity. I have chosen for myself that I want to age in a certain way. I'm going to fight the hands of time as hard as I can, because I do want to look in the mirror and feel like I'm still attractive, but that's not everybody's journey. That's not everybody's path. And we really shouldn't judge other people. Like say you're somebody and you don't have the means to get Botox, or you've just chosen not to do it.
Yeah,
well, that's the path that you're okay doing, you know?
That's right. And it's just, you know, it's hard because when we watch shows like the Oscars or we're watching people in a box and TV, I mean, we are looking at their image, right? So it's different than a pedestrian person that chooses not to do it. And that's fine. And I just think that also, if we're not so affected by what people think of us, aging will happen a lot more gracefully.
Yeah. I mean, I look at like, you know, Jane Fonda, for example. Yeah. Yes. She had a very expensive facelift. She's also works out. She's in her 80s. She's with it. She chose that path. And it's nobody's, nobody should judge other people, but I know we all do. And the thing that you said a few minutes ago that I loved is you talked about like how you were pretty and you were a model, and then you felt like you had a shelf life at 35, but then you decided to work on your insides and educate yourself and do all the things that you've done for your insides to match your physical appearance. And I feel like women don't realize that a lot of times, that it's like we're so judgmental of each other, right? We don't dress for men. We dress for each other. That's the joke. My husband's like, if it was up to him, I would be dressing like a Russian prostitute. Like sometimes I'll have my Spanx slip on, like to put a dress over it. And he'll be like, oh, that's so pretty. Why don't you wear that? I'm like, am I a Russian prostitute? No.
Right.
You know, but we dress to impress other women, and we're also hard on each other for our physical appearance, but it is really pretty empowering to know that, like, I personally am also like working on my insides the past couple years. I actually am starting, and I like my insides. I like who I'm becoming and evolving, and the shit show that I had to go through to get here, I wouldn't trade with anybody. But it's so important. So important.
It's so important because I've worked with so many women who they think if I lose weight and I have this sort of body, I'll be happy. And then they get there and they're like, no, because that's not going to make you feel alive. And people don't come to therapy to be happy. They come to therapy to feel alive. So they've thought, if my body looks like this, I'm this number on the scale, I'll be happy. And it doesn't happen. And then they realize it's about how they feel about themselves, how they feel in their body. And are they being authentic to themselves? And are they living the way that they want to live and expressing themselves? And, you know, generativity. I want to leave the world in a better place. I want to know that I mattered in some way to help the world be better. And that's, to me, what makes me feel fucking hot.
Yeah. And you're doing it, sister. You can't take that teeny tiny crocodile Hermes bag with you. I mean, you could have put it in your coffin, but like,
or it could have burned in the fire. And like, you know what? Yeah. Like that doesn't matter. And so I think that that's what what I find that works for me is being authentic, expressing my authenticity, good, bad, or different, and doing work that's meaningful to me, whatever that means for me and whoever's listening, whatever that means for you. And if you're not doing it now, start tomorrow.
Yeah.
Start tomorrow. You know, I mean, listen, here's the thing. The average age of a female, what they say now, is going to be 85, okay? So your kid, let's say if you did decide to have children, and not everybody does, and so many women are not today, and I totally understand that, right? The world is diverse. Let's say your kids go off to school. Okay, my kids went off to school. Now what? What are you going to do with the next 30 years from 50 to 80? You know what? Women, you have power. You have white magic. Go use it. Go use it. Go use your brains. Go use your intelligence. Go use your creativity as Megan's done. Take a risk. You're a prime example of that.
Well, thank you. But I will say, I think it takes, and we're all like working through something, right, to get to the end goal, which is hopefully to be, for me, to be reunited with my dad and Julie and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's why I try. But I think that everybody has to go through certain things, and we're so judgmental, like I said, about appearance. And I wonder, like, what are we all offering? What are we all doing to better mm-hmm. the universe? And I'm sorry mm-hmm. to like kind of go off on that tangent, but it, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty open with my audience, and
And that's, and you know, I think you bring up a really valid point in that just because we work on ourselves, or mm-hmm. even when we're in therapy, or even when we grow in certain areas, such as like you taking a risk and doing this mm-hmm. with your show and really being consistent with it and having follow through, that doesn't mean that those insecurities go away. Right. But you're sharing it in a way to let people know it's okay. You know, women, and that's another issue that I have with the housewives, back to the housewives. It's that I am watching grown women my age eat caviar and drink champagne. And I do like it because, you know, my job's kind of heavy. So it is like TV for me, but I'm almost at the point where that they're fighting and they hate each other. Like if we keep seeing that over and over and over and over again, we're going to be against each other. No, we need women. We need to be kind with each other. We need to be supportive because we all know how hard it is to be a woman.
It's a very weird dynamic. It's so strange. My dream as like, I think I told you this when I first came to see you, I was like, I want to be a real housewife. And part of me was kidding because my old friends would always like laugh and be like, you're going to be a real housewife. Because yes, I am about drama. I am about, yes. you know, all the things that I'm about mm-hmm. that make me who I am. But I also like am finding that I want so badly to like get rid of this pain that I'm still carrying and the anger mm-hmm. of like seeing a face that genuinely hurt me. And that's the thing that I find. Why do women do this to each other? Why do they tear each other down? And I think that I'm throwing fire at it by watching The Real Housewives, because, you know, 1 week Sutton is on top and they're all friends with her. And then the weird new Crystal girl's like, why did you walk in my room when I was naked? Like, that's mm-hmm. not about Sutton. That's about you, Crystal. That was weird. You know?
Yeah. And you know, I have a daughter. I have three, I have a lot of daughters because I have my daughter and then I have stepdaughters. And I often think, what type of world do I want to leave them? You know, not that, you know, I'm going to control where the world ends up, but in my corner of the world, what sort of example and model am I setting for them? Because they're heading into being an older woman. And
yeah.
I just don't understand. It's almost like we take away our own power and agency by not banding together. And, you know, I talk a lot about the dark tetrad, which, as you know, is a type of personality that has psychopathy, Machiavellianism, narcissism, and sadism. And it's under an umbrella called the dark tetrad. And Tom Girardi is one of those people where he mm-hmm. has stolen from people and he's rationalized it somehow. I don't know what his rationalization is. But what also the research has shown, which I love, is that there's a cohort of people called the white triad or the light triad, right? The light triad. And they are women over 50 that are into the world's being a better place, having generativity, having ethics, having morals, not being perfect, but striving for community amongst all. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, why not strive for that instead of striving to have 20,000 Birkin bags and fight with your friends over caviar and champagne?
It's such a weird dynamic. And I still catch myself doing things or saying things.
Of course. I'm
human. We're all human and we'll be like, oh my God. But
as a parent, we have an obligation to how we are living our lives. And I know what type of parent you are.
Well, that we're going to go into that. That's our last topic. I will say though, after all that stuff happened with my kids, because my girls are my whole world. And I know you understand that because you're such a good mom. Mm-hmm. But I tell them like every day, like, I'm like, were you nice? Were you kind to people? That's to me what I want them to be. I think from a really young age, and I've talked about this before on the podcast, I was so, it was so important what my physical appearance looked like and being popular. I don't know if I necessarily put that on myself, but I think some of it was just, you know, not like my mom's fault, but my mom was a beauty queen and it was all about mm-hmm. appearance. And so mm-hmm. I started to care about appearance, and then it turned into like me being chubby and then losing the weight, and everyone wanted to be my friend. So I had this obsession with like having friends and being popular for my mm-hmm. whole life, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Until the past few years where I've been like, okay, I'd rather have 5 really solid good friends that I trust than a big, big group of friends that are going to talk trash about each other. So at the end of the day, I tell my kids every day, like, how was school? What did you do? Were you nice to everybody? Did you talk to people that were being left out? And that's the kind of thing as parents, and believe me, I'm no perfect parent, should be caring about and teaching our daughters. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. And I mean, we are so blessed in this country. If you look at what's happening in mm-hmm. Afghanistan, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have opportunity to make a difference in the world, to use our empathy and compassion to make the world a better place. And I think that that's a really important message. Or go out and be a kick-ass boss, or run a Fortune 500 company, or come up with a patent, you know, like earn the Nobel Peace Prize. Just go embrace life in different ways than we've been conditioned to embrace life, which is about what we look like, you know, the size of our tits, the size of our waist, the size of our ass. Like, we are more than that.
Yeah.
My father gave me nothing but good genes.
Well, it's not that's very fair. But
you know, it's like, everybody's like, how are you thin? I'm like, it's my genes too, But I just know that we're more than that. And I think being a parent has also taught me that too.
And also, we're not going to be attractive forever. If we are on this planet, like, I mean, knowing me, I'm going to be like Joan Rivers or Diana Wendelstein, whatever that lady's name is, the lion lady, God forbid. But, it's almost like a weird Benjamin Button kind of thing, right? Where you, as we age, we learn so much about our inside selves, but we want so much to look like our young selves when we didn't realize how good we looked, I know.
It's weird. Youth is wasted on the young, for sure. But I don't know. There's something out there that has it figured out much better than we do, and I just surrender into that.
Well, let me ask you a question. So this is our last topic we're going to kind of still go into. So I love the fact that you are such a great mom. And recently, I know that your daughter's getting married and your son is a rapper. And I love the fact that you, I think you recently posted this. Yes. And I was like, this is why I love her. But you were like, one day he came home and he was like, Mom, I want to become a rapper. And I think about how many parents would be like, no. And you were just like, okay, do it. And he did it. So how did you get to be the kind of parent that you are? I mean, I know you've had to work so much on yourself, but like, I'm not really asking selfishly because I really need tips. I'm struggling with a tween right now who does not listen to me and is talking back. And I just think my audience, a lot of mothers would want to know like some tips that you can give. Because I think that's pretty brave that you were like, go ahead, become a rapper.
I know. It is kind of funny, right? You know, I think that I had a great mom. I know I had a great mom. And she was, you know, as I've spoken before, very progressive, very psychological. And she just was a great teacher about how to be a mom. And then I learned a lot through my schooling. And trust me, I wish I'd gone to school when my kids were younger because I wouldn't be spending so much in therapy now. But that didn't happen, and that's okay. And I feel like everybody, I know that love is two things, quality of connection and giving my children the space to be who they are. And I think for a lot of parents, myself included, we have a vision of what we think our children should be, maybe our unlived lives, or we want them to be this way or that way, but that's not them. Mm-hmm. And so I gave him this, it's not that I gave him the space, he came and said it to me, and I really believed that he could do it. I just think anybody can do anything if they want to put their mind to it. And why not support your child? What's going to ever happen? I mean, he wasn't saying, Mom, I want to be a drug dealer. I, you know,
but he was in high school and he was going to go to college. What was the,
you know what happened? He had seen a very traumatic incident that happened in Manhattan Beach, where he had seen, there was, I don't know if you know the story about, there were these teenagers on that double decker bus. That boy died and he had pulled the other boy down and saved him.
I didn't ever know that.
Yeah. So after that incident, he really started to write a lot. And I took him to a doctor because his stomach was upset, of course, because he had some IBS after that. And the doctor said, poetry and writing will be his healer. And I listened to him and I knew that that was a way for my son to manage his existential angst or his angst about becoming a young man. I mean, listen, he also had his dad who's the Wolf of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My husband's pretty alpha. So he's surrounded by alpha men. And I just held the space that this is what his soul needs. And either it'll work for him or it won't. And he put in the work and it worked.
Yeah. So now he's
touring. He's touring with, she's opening with Swayze. And here's the thing. Also, I think growing up in Brooklyn, people weren't really into facades in Brooklyn. No, nobody was like keeping up with the Joneses in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Everybody was poor and just scraping it like their lives together. So I was like, yeah, be a rapper. I mean, I don't know. Why not? I don't know.
I here's the thing. So my kids are very different. One is the opposite of me. And then my younger one is like, if you could clone me and have my clone come out exact, which is terrifying, by the way, that there will be another one of me on this planet. But we're different, but we're just so much alike. We both love to sing and we sing every day. We have a lot in common. But then my older daughter is just, you know, doesn't want to brush her hair, doesn't care about her physical appearance, is just, you know, like, let me go to school and just not brush my hair. So I find myself yelling a lot and really angry because I'm putting my stuff on her. Yes. And it's really about me. And then I'm finding that she's becoming resentful and angry at me. And then Ron and she have this like bond.
Yeah.
And I'm fighting with him. It's just a whole thing. So is there...
Yeah, I think, you know, one time when I was in supervision, because when you're a therapist, you do supervision with other therapists. And I remember training in one session and doing supervision. And one of the other therapists, who was also a mother, said one of the wisest things. I'll never forget it. She said, it's our job to tolerate our disappointment in our children, or if they're not what we think they should be. And it really stuck with me that they are their own people. They come through us, but we don't own them, you know? And so I've done that thousands of times, like before this thing with my son, for sure, put more of my beliefs onto them. But they do resent you, and it does create separation, and your daughter's a creative genius. So
do you think that people should put their kids in therapy? Like if you're starting to notice, I mean, I've been dealing this now for a few years, and she has talked to you before, but like, I'm wondering, what is the best solution if you are, especially with girls and mothers, I think have issues. Do you recommend therapy at a young age for kids?
I mean, my daughter, I think, started therapy at 16. My son at 16 as well. I think at too young of an age, it doesn't work. I just don't think it does. But I think, you know, 15, 16, when they're starting to find their own identity and separate from their family and discover who they are, you find a good therapist that you also have a good relationship with, then it works great. Because the mother and the therapist need to be connected. My daughter had a great therapist, Tamar Colin, shout out to her. And, you know, I always wrote her letters. She would always send me cards, you know. We had a very nice relationship. And I just look at a therapist, especially for that trying time, as another resource for the child. But it has to be a good fit for the family. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
I just think it's
And go to somebody who has kids. Don't go to a therapist who doesn't have kids.
Oh, and I do want to point that out. So I think I've talked about this before, and I have brought it up on episodes. I think Amy's episode a couple episodes ago, and then I had one where we talk about if you do end up in therapy, make sure that you are with the correct therapist, because I've said this before, it's like dating. And if somebody goes into therapy and they go, oh, I'm never going to therapy again, this is not for me, no way. Maybe they won't ever go back, but it's so, so important. Cause I will tell you this, I'm a work in progress of 100%. I just openly talked about all the things I'm still dealing with, but if I wouldn't have taken the step a few years ago to go into therapy and deal with all the stuff that wasn't even necessarily stemming from what was happening with the friend stuff, I don't know where I would be. And I can't tell you how many of my listeners reach out to me. And that's kind of also not to plug my co-sponsor, but online therapy. It's online-therapy.com. I partnered with them because a lot of people can't go to Dr. Nay. And I say this in the commercial.
Right.
You know, it's something I believe in. And I think that if you're questioning any of the things that I talk about on this podcast, depression, anxiety, suicidal ideations, struggling with like your kids and not knowing like as a parent how to deal with your anger, all of that stuff is going to help you become and evolve into a better person, I think. Not like I'm saying I'm a great person, but going to help you in the lessons of life to get past stuff, right?
Yeah. And I think the way you say it is beautiful, to help you evolve. And that's why I love the title of Michelle Obama's book, right? It's called Becoming. Mm-hmm. We never really land. We're never done until we die. We're always becoming more of who our soul wants us to be. And therapy is a process. You might get there because you feel bad, but really that's what the process is about, is helping you. Those symptoms are a sign for you to connect back in, and that therapist will help you do that.
And it's a gift that you give to yourself, right? Like
it's a gift that you
to get my big butt on my Peloton this morning. Do you think I wanted to do that? No, I did not. I don't like any of those teachers. I'm not going to be able to walk tomorrow, but I did it. So I worked on my butt. I worked on my, you know, my physical, like my physical body, specifically my stomach that I'm working on. And it's so important to work on our brains. So important.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right. And our hearts. Yep. And our hearts. Yeah. And yeah, it's, we're always becoming, and that's important to have compassion with ourselves through that this process called life, because as this year has showed us, it's life can be very tough.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be tough. So number one, Erica Jane, please return your jewelry.
Please.
We're begging you. Yeah. Please return your jewelry. Tom Girardi, if you are faking that you have Alzheimer's, shame on you. There's a special place for you that I think my stepfather might be waiting for you in, who passed, that you are most likely going to. Not going to say where. Number two, aging is, we all go through it. We all will be old one day. Own it. Go to the doctor. Go to your gyno. Go talk to, if you're having hormonal issues, look into what I talked about, like maybe HRT. Yeah. Look into different things, but please go to your OB-GYN, because if I would have waited, who knows what would have happened. If you would have waited when you were younger and you had breast cancer, like you wouldn't be here. That's so, right. So important. And then number three, if you are like me and you're struggling with how to be a good parent or how to talk to your kids, or your kid wants to become a rapper, let your kid become a rapper. You know, let your kids be your kids, right?
That's right. And there's so much great material. Dan Siegel has beautiful books about how to be a healthy parent. I highly recommend him.
Okay. Keep living. Keep praying and keep growing. Thanks, Dr. Nay.
My pleasure.
Hi, everybody. Have you heard of Instacart? If you have not heard of Instacart, I don't know where you have been living, because it saved my life. I don't have to go to the grocery store. I can get my stuff delivered to my house. And if you go to judgingmegan.com/Instacart, you will get $35 off of your first order if you've never ordered before. So I would say get on there right now and skip your trip to the grocery store.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.